You had your master's degree in business administration, 1956. And then you were a graduate of the Graduate School of Banking at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, which is really nothing. That's a trade school.
But I notice this is the first time banking comes into our discussion here.
Well, I very accidentally got into banking. And when I finished my master's, the faculty at OU thought I was a capable scholar. I never viewed myself that way at all. But they arranged for me to get an assistantship at the University of Texas, where the institutional economics, and a man named Dr. Clarence Ayers was the international guru of institutional economics. They arranged for me to have a fellowship there. We've left out a segment here. And I was in Austin looking at apartments when I had a call from a colonel that I'd worked for on Okinawa. He said, "You've got to come back. I've got to have you." And that was 1956, as David was just a baby. And I thought, you know, number one, I'm not a scholar. I would end up as a professor at a second-rate university. And I have a chance now to make quite a lot of money by those standards, because he gave me a position equivalent to a brigadier general's pay. We had a great time in Okinawa. I'm not going to go to graduate school. I'm going back to Okinawa for 2 years. And I did. So at the end of that period, I saw all these expatriates and their families. After they'd been out of the country for 5 years, they could never come back. They were out of touch with what was happening in this country. And I said, I want my children to grow up in Oklahoma. My daughter was born in Okinawa. So I looked around. I had a job offer from an international sales firm in New York. But I said, I really want to go back to Oklahoma. So I came back home, visiting with the chairman of the finance department, Jim Murphy. He said, you know, Gene, you've got a degree in finance and economics. You could be in the banking business. He said, I've been on the board of this little bank in Noble, and the man that owns it has been in the hospital 16 times in the last 2 years. He said, you ought to visit him because he needs somebody. So I went and visited the guy, and in about 30 minutes' time, we had agreed that I would come to work in that little bank. I accepted a salary 1/4 of what I was making, but that I would get 50% of the increase in the profit, and that we would look for other, and whoever thought of buying control of a bank? I didn't know. I didn't know people owned banks. But it sounded good to me. So I said yes, and we moved to Noble.
All on the tip of that professor at OU.
Only because of Jim Murphy. Otherwise, I would never have been in the bank business.
Isn't that amazing? And his name again is?
Jim Murphy. James M. Murphy.
And I'm sure you've gone back to thank him.
Many times, and he became a shareholder in some of our enterprise. He went on to Wichita State, the Kansas State Banker Association, but we stayed in touch, and he became a shareholder. He's deceased now for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I stayed in touch.
Something else that was going on in Norman and in Oklahoma, and that's race relations.
Well, Norman was worse than the rest of Oklahoma.
Right.
Because Norman was a sundown town, this bastion of intellectual liberalism, theoretically.
A sundown town meant what?
An Afro-American could not be in town after dark.
Signs were posted.
Well, I don't remember exactly how we communicated, but there were no Afro-Americans in Norman. I think it was city ordinance.
Yes.
So as a consequence, I did not know any Afro-Americans until really I was in the Army, because the university was just becoming desegregated.
There were 50 towns in Oklahoma that were sundown towns. Edmond and Norman were the largest. But you didn't feel any of that, did you?
I didn't. I didn't even know anything about it.
Yeah. And Norman wasn't all that big.
Well, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And really, there was not much poverty in Norman either. They may have been a janitor to school, but they were employed.
And blacks, knowing there's a sundown town,
they didn't come.
Wouldn't want to come around it. So that's why
come.
You didn't know that. Yep. But then in 1958, the lunch counter demonstrations began when Clara Looper, 13 children, including her daughter, in Oklahoma City, sat up to the lunch counter in Katz Drugstore, asked for a Coke and a hamburger. And that lunch counter demonstration model started in Oklahoma City. Ada Lois Sipuel tried to enter the OU Law School in 1946. The case became a test case, went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and when she came to Norman, it was a sundown town, and she couldn't stay overnight in Norman. She could come to the school. Isn't that something?
It's just unfathomable at this point in history.
And I just think it's important for us to review that so that others looking back and say, well, this is where we were, and they can decide how far we've come.
Can we tell tales and stories?
Of course.
I've to a large degree seen the world. Several years ago, I went to India because it's such a fascinating country. I traveled with a lady who's Hindu. She's a Brahmin, the highest Brahmin caste, speaks Hindi as Hindu. I would observe, you know, how can India possibly progress with the size population they have, with all the poverty? She says, we passed a law saying it's illegal to treat caste people any differently. To which I said, and I say, yes, we passed laws against segregation, but segregation will be with us, the impact of it, for generations in the future.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to break those. People that you meet that have been educated in the British Jamaica, just having a different language creates a different image. And I don't understand why the Afro-American communities don't focus on how we do better. And I've got some great Afro-American friends, but they're educated.
It is the answer.
I don't understand the community not doing more for itself and we not making it more available.
Right. But then, you know, you can also have amongst educated people hatred toward other races.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, you, Professor George Henderson.
Who's a good friend of mine.
Came here in 1967 to OU. People would throw garbage on the lawn, death threats. He had to go to Oklahoma City to get a haircut. You talked to him and heard about his story.
Yes.
We have his story elsewhere on this website, and he talks about going down to Little Dixie and speaking, didn't know where he was, and saw this car following him out for a long, long time, wondering if this was the end of his life. But that was back then.
Yes. We've certainly moved away from some of that. I knew George and his wife. They had a son who died of cancer, who was at MD Anderson at the same time Janine was, so we saw them very routinely. Grief and death come the same, regardless of color of skin.
Sure enough.